Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. Of course, YoKratom has been a longtime sponsor of this show and this entire podcast network, so we're very grateful to them. If you're over the age of 21 and you enjoy Kratom, make sure to get your Kratom at YoKratom.com. All of their stuff is lab tested, it's quality, and they ship it right to your door, and it's the best price you're going to find anywhere. $60 for a kilo. You will not beat that price. YoKratom.com. All right, let's get back into the show.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am Dave Smith. He is Robbie the Fire Bernstein, back home from Key West. How are you, sir?
I had a great time in Key West. Anytime you want to bail on a gig and hook me up with a nice condo at the beach, please.
I will try to get the stomach flu more often for you.
That's how you become a headliner, apparently. You just got to wait for your buddy to get sick.
You just have to poison the guy you're opening for.
And I actually said that at every show.
Did you? That's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Very good. All right. Very good. Well, if you didn't see it in Key West, you missed it, because I'm not getting sick no more. I'm going to be around for all these other ones, and we got a bunch of big ones. The next big, big one coming up is April 12th in Portland at the Aladdin Theater. This is the first theater show I've ever headlined, so please come out for this. Last I checked, tickets were selling pretty well, but I was a little bit nervous about this because, you know, it's a much bigger room than we normally play, but the tickets are selling good, but there's still some available. So come on out to that one. And then we're back at the Funny Bone in St. Louis, which we had such a great time.
Yeah, that was a cool one.
There, one of the best weekends of the year last year. So very excited for that. And then we got Tacoma and Spokane, Washington. Evidently those are the places we are allowed to play in Washington. And then another theater show in Atlantic City on June 1st, Nashville, Tennessee. It's not up on the website yet, but we will be in at Vegas at Wise Guys in Las Vegas, I believe in June. Should be up on the website by the end of the week. ComicDaveSmith.com would be that website that was mentioned. And of course, RobbieTheFire.com, where you can find all Rob's headlining gigs, not just the ones he poisons me for. He's got his own. He's got some of his own too. And of course, Run Your Mouth is Rob's other fantastic podcast. All right. So look, I will, we've quite extensively been covering the Candace Owens, drama over the last couple of weeks. And, it's not, you know, I do find it to be a very interesting, topic within the kind of, it just says a lot about the, internet media landscape, the right wing divisions in America over, support for Israel. And it's been a very interesting story to me. I promise we will we'll take a break from it. But I really thought we had to talk about this latest video that's come out. From what I saw so far, I have not seen, Ben Shapiro has not addressed the situation. Again, this is from what I've seen so far. I don't have a Daily Wire subscription. I don't watch any of the shows on the Daily Wire. I just like see what clips are going viral, but there hasn't been anything I've seen. And I figure it would have come across my desk, you know, so to speak, if Ben Shapiro had responded. Nothing from him. I saw Michael Knowles just basically said no comment. Like, he was like, I love everybody involved. I got nothing to say. It's sad. She's not here anymore. And that's that. And went about his thing. This gentleman, who's one of the, I'm blanking on his name, but I should know it, because we're about to talk about him. Andrew Clavin. I've seen before, where they would do those like Daily Wire shows where it's like all of them smoking cigars, sitting around chatting and stuff. Anyway, he's one of the guys who's been around at the Daily Wire for a long time. He was the only person I've seen so far who's really said something about it. There was a statement put out by the Daily Wire that was like, we're going our separate ways. Candace Owens basically said, I'm free. You know what I mean? And so there was that, but nobody's really gotten into it. He did seem to at least give his perspective of where Candace Owens crossed the line. And it seems to be that she tweeted Christ is King at one point throughout this feud with Ben Shapiro, or her positions on Israel. Anyway, let's play this video. And I thought me and Rob could respond to it.
Grown. You know, when I did this, by the way, the priest who baptized me said, you know, Christians won't accept you. You'll still be a Jew. And I said, well, I am. That's my race. I'm a Jew. I'm proud of my race. It's a great race. It's done many, many great things, including write the Bible. And, you know, I am a Jew. But that hasn't happened at all. Christians have welcomed me with open arms, except this Christ the King anti-Semitic crowd. Christ is the King. And one day every knee will bow and recognize it, because he's not just my king, he's king of the universe. But when you use that phrase to mean that God has abandoned his chosen people, the Jews, through whom he came into this world incarnate, and that he's broken his promises, his covenant with the Jews, you are quoting scripture like Satan does in the Bible. You are quoting scripture to your purposes, and that to me is specifically wicked. You know, when you spit that phrase at Ben Shapiro, my friend Ben Shapiro, and you know, I understand this. All of you who love Ben, and I love Ben, and Jordan Peterson, you all want to see them find Jesus, because you know what joy and freedom that gives you, and you certainly feel that it alters your relationship with God. But when I think about this, to be honest with you, you know, and I know some people will disagree with this, but life is not a game show where you guess the name of God and you get to go to heaven. Honk, you know, yes, the name is Jesus. I look at Ben's life and I think if Ben were to embrace Jesus Christ, it would cause devastation to his family, to the people who love him, to the people who listen to him, to his position in the world. I just have this feeling that God has put this guy where he wants him to do what he wants him to do. And as you know, I feel that, you know, the Jews were not abandoned by God.
Yeah, so this was his thing about how she tweeted Christ is King at Ben Shapiro. And so this was over the line, and then goes off on a whole thing about how it's if you believe Christ, if you say Christ is King, you're essentially accepting that Jesus Christ basically Jesus Christ abandoned God's chosen people, the Jews, and therefore, I don't know. And then something about how the people who want to like push Christianity, like look how much pain it would cause Ben Shapiro in his life if he were to accept Jesus Christ, and therefore this he shouldn't. Let me just preface by saying that I personally, I would say that I agree. My personal belief is that I don't believe that, say, a really good person who was like good to all of their friends and their family and was a good person, but was Jewish and didn't accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. I don't believe that person's going to hell. That's not my belief, but I'm pretty sure that is the standard Christian belief.
Isn't also you can be real bad and then accept Christ at the end?
I think so. Yeah. I think, but that's a risky game, Rob, because you don't know if you're going to have time at the end. You might get hit by a bus. You might get, you know what I mean? Like you might have a stroke. You may not have, like, everybody thinks they're going to have that moment on their deathbed where they're like, all right, listen, I did kill those 12 nuns, but now I'm going to apologize for it and accept Jesus and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you don't know if you're going to have that
as
moment.
As a safety measure, can you just, after every sin, just do it? Like, you go out, you slaughter a village, then you go, I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior.
Listen, I'm not an expert in the theology.
You reset. You just reset every 24 hours.
Rob, you might be the Jewiest Christian of all time. You might be a Jewier Christian than that guy was. Anyway, I guess there's been this thing which has kind of been picking up some steam online about the mostly Jewish Zionists saying that tweeting Christ is King is anti-Semitic. And
get a better crown. That one looks a little painful.
Well, that's fair. Now, that's a fair criticism. Right. But anyway,
no more bad jokes. I'll let you roll.
No, well, I feel that there's this thing, and this is something I've kind of felt for a long time, and I think me and you more or less agree about this. But one of our, as two Jewish people, one of our biggest criticism of Jews, generally speaking, in our country, in America, is like the whiny victim mentality is just awful, and it's just completely unhelpful. And I think we're pretty consistent across the board here, where I call this out amongst almost any group of people who like obsessively paint themselves as victims. I just don't like it. I don't think it's helpful or productive. I mean, look, there is there are groups that are so victimized that, okay, you know what I mean? If you want to talk about that, I'd understand it. If the Palestinians today want to talk about being victimized, or if people in, you know, wherever, there's places where people are really, truly victims. But in the United States of America, particularly amongst a group like Jews who are thriving, I hate it. And my attitude has always been that, look, like my whole family story is that my grandfather fled a place where it was really awful to be a Jew. And they seized his father's business, and they took all of their stuff, and they killed a bunch of his family members. And they, like, these awful things happened. And he got on a boat to America by the grace of God, you know, like, was so lucky to get this ticket. That I forget the exact whole story, but it was a crazy thing they had to go through to get him out of the country. And he got real sick on the boat, and then he got to America. And in America, he was able to prosper and have a great family. And this is why, you know, he gave my mother and her brother a better life than he had. And then I got a better life. And you know what I mean? And it's like, and I look at here where, okay, so that was my family's story. And then broader, in a broader sense, the broader Jewish family's story is that basically we were oppressed everywhere and we just kept getting it, you know? And look, I know there's people out there who have different arguments, and people will be like, well, no, it was the Jews deserved it or something like that. I don't even care if that's your attitude or not. I don't think that's right. But regardless, I'm just saying from my perspective, it's like, well, look, if this is the story that we got kicked out of all these nations, there were pogroms and there was oppression, and then there was the rise of the Nazis, and then there was the Holocaust, and then there's all these terrible things that have happened in Jews. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. Well, I grew up in a country where there's never been any obstacle in my way because I was Jewish. There's never been anything I couldn't do because I was Jewish. I mean, like, I'm not saying I've never had any, you know, it's like the dumb, like, woke left standard of like, yeah, I mean, I could like, if I wanted to come up with a few examples of someone calling me like a kike or something like that, or like, it's like, I experienced racism or whatever. But like, no, the truth is, in my life, I've been able to achieve everything that I had enough talent and enough work ethic to go want to achieve. Nothing has held me back because I'm Jewish. And Jews in general have thrived in the United States of America. They're 2% of the population, and they're quite dominant in many, many different fields. And I'm not also like, I'm not like a woke left winger, and I'm not like a Jew hating right winger who thinks there's inherently something wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with like dominating a specific field. If that's fine. But anyway, but I do think that the attitude that Jewish people ought to have in a majority Christian country that has put no roadblocks in their way and they are welcome across the spectrum of social and political and cultural life, in fact, highly disproportionately involved in all of those things, I do think the attitude should be to be kind of grateful to the country. Now, I'm not saying like I'm obviously very critical of our government, but like in terms of the country, the people, I feel like we should be our default position should be like, hey, that's pretty awesome. This is a great place. Thanks for having us. You know what I mean? And I think that should be the attitude of almost every successful minority. You know, if you're a minority of the country and you're really succeeding there, then the attitude should be like, oh, what a great country. By definition, that should be your attitude. And to turn around and start lecturing Christians about how their view that you have to accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior in order to get into heaven is wrong, or for them to say Christ is King is wrong, or somehow is Jew hating. It's like, I don't know. I'm a libertarian. I believe like people have the right to their religion. And it's like bad form, and it's also really stupid. It's like if you were like in a horrible like house where you were like being abused, and then someone else let you into their house and treated you really well, and then you start complaining about like the color schemes and their curtains or something like that. That's not the right attitude to have. And also, it might get you kicked out of this house. It's pretty stupid. So anyway, that's all I just wanted to say about that. You know, like this thing where like Jews in America are lecturing Christians about their interpretation of Christianity, it just seems like a bad idea on many levels and wrong. I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that, Rob.
I need to watch a little bit more of that clip because it seems maybe I'm missing a little context or nuance, but I just think jumping at anyone for saying the line Christ is King sounds to me like you're being a Jew. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of playing it up. It doesn't strike me like that's some horribly offensive thing.
Yeah,
or a threat, or I don't really understand how you twist that as being, oh my God.
Well, and like the idea of being like, well, if you're saying God rejected his chosen people or something like that, it's like, dude, you can't like you have a right to view yourself as part of God's chosen people, but you can't like insist that other people do. That's ridiculous. And by the way, I also don't believe that, you know, like I believe in God. I don't believe that you're going to hell if you picked the wrong religion, even if you're a really good person. I don't buy that. I also don't believe that like Jews are the chosen people and others are not chosen. All of that to me just doesn't sound right. That just sounds a lot more like something men made up than something God made up to me. But that's my own personal belief. Not trying to push that on anybody else. All right. Anyway, let's get back into politics, huh? We got a presidential race coming up, and it is, you know, it's already March, and it's almost, March is almost over. I shouldn't say it's already March. I should say March is already almost already over. We're getting into this year, and this is, you know, there's not that much longer to go, so it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. I think as of right now, it looks... We're basically in the situation we've been in. I know me and Rob have kind of disagreed on our speculation on what we think might happen here, although both of us with kind of the caveat that the other one might be right. But as of right now, it pretty much looks like if there is any legitimate democratic process here, Donald Trump is the overwhelming favorite to win. There's so much policy-wise that's going against Joe Biden on the major issues that really matter. People are not with him. And also the fact that if he actually has to run a campaign, it's kind of inconceivable that he could feasibly do that. I think a lot of us are still not completely convinced that Joe Biden's going to be the nominee. And then, of course, the big elephant in the room is the idea that Donald Trump might get taken out or tied down by all of this stuff. We're starting to get a little bit of a clearer picture of what the ramifications of some of these court cases are going to be as relates to Donald Trump's presidential campaign. So let's go to this clip from earlier today on Face the Nation.
Good morning, Margaret. Former President Trump's lawyers say he will not be able to secure this bond by Monday's deadline. And there could be a delay tactic or an appeal they announce in the next 24 hours. But it's very clear that at this point, they don't have the money to put up, even though Trump's trying to maybe use the merger of a social media company to get some leverage here. It is clear the Attorney General of New York is moving very aggressively, already has a file in Westchester County to begin the process of seizing assets in that area of New York. And she could use a marshal or a sheriff to begin freezing Trump's bank accounts and taking prized properties like Trump Tower and 40 Wall Street in the coming weeks.
What are the political ramifications of this? Obviously, there are huge financial and personal ones for Mr. Trump.
Even as he faces this financial crisis, it could be a political crisis as well. There is a cash crunch in the 2024 presidential race. President Biden's campaign raising a lot of money. Trump might have to turn to the Republican National Committee to help pay his legal bills. His daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, now an executive at the RNC. At the same time, a logistical nightmare here, being mired in all of these financial transactions and a possible criminal case over hush money payments in the coming weeks.
All right. So that to me, that's pretty interesting. Any thoughts jump out at you, Rob?
Well, first and foremost, I was talking about this on Run Your Mouth a little bit, but you read about some of these squatters and how hard it is for people that legitimately own property just to get the people out of their house. Or sometimes I know friends who have been the victims of drunk driving accidents and how hard it is for them to actually collect money that's owed to them. So it's pretty incredible that when the government wants your money, they've got all the power in the world to just take it. It just that is fairly incredible to me. In this case, it's odd to me that they're able to take the buildings this early in the process, as he still does have the ability to appeal. So I don't exactly know what that looks like. If the government seizes the properties, what's done with the properties, and then if he manages to win the appeal, if then he gets them back. I think obviously this is bad for New York, and that you've got to really be afraid about doing business in New York if you are an outspoken conservative person. I do really think that this changes. I mean, obviously, I don't know that there's anyone quite on Trump's level that the system wants to take you down.
Yeah.
Those are like the biggest things that strike me. Of course, Donald Trump does. I mean, it's funny because it was always a thing where he claimed to be a billionaire, and then all the reporters always said it's not true. And he might have actually talked his way into being a billionaire with the Truth Social here. And it's like the constant Looney Tunes dynamic of him being in trouble and then somehow pulling out a win. But it is kind of funny that Donald Trump is like, I mean, $500 million is an absurd amount of money. And I'm sure that there's other billionaires that can't just come up with $500 million, particularly if you just got into trouble for taking loans from banks. And if you're running for president, you can't just call up someone in Saudi Arabia as easily and just get a check cut to you. But just from a na-na-na-boo-boo, you're an idiot type thing, it is kind of fun to watch Donald Trump scrambling because he can't actually come up with the money.
Yeah, I get your point on that, too. And the first point you made there is such a good one, too. I know people, too, of like a divorce, proceedings like that, like when child support's owed and stuff like that. I know people have a hell of a time collecting the money. And yeah, but all of a sudden they're snapping into action. Now, as the reporter mentioned there, it was on Face the Nation. He's probably not really a reporter, but he says they have 24 hours here where the Trump's lawyers can file some type of motion, but they are waiting. They're already ready to go start seizing his assets. I think you make a good point about business in New York and stuff, but the political question here is like, oh, so now we are already at a point. It really hasn't taken much more than this, where quite possibly Donald Trump's presidential campaign is going to be completely strapped for cash, and he's going to have to be dependent on the RNC. And this does, I'll tell you, make a big difference. And this was, I know that part of the reason why John Bolton ended up in Donald Trump's cabinet was because Sheldon Adelson really wanted him there. And this guy, now it may not, and there's this weird thing where, you know, politics, it's such a swampy, it's such a swampy field. Even when Donald Trump says, oh, I'm going to drain the swamp. And it's like, yeah, it's a nice thing to say, man. But I don't think you have the first idea how to go about doing it. Because the thing is that even if, when Donald Trump stood up there and he goes, I'm going to self-fund my my campaign, which I don't think he actually ended up doing, but he said that, and feasibly, you know, theoretically he had enough money. He didn't spend that much money on his campaigns in 2016 compared to like Obama and Hillary Clinton and them. He was smart. He used Twitter and he got the media talking about him all the time. He didn't really need to waste money like they did. But it's like, oh, okay, even if you're going to self-fund your own campaign, then he got hit with the thing where it's like, okay, are you going to fund every Republican congressman's campaign? Because if not, you kind of need someone who's going to, because you can't really get your agenda through unless you got some people in Congress and in the Senate there who are going to like be on your side. And so now the guy who's spending $100 million on congressional races, all of a sudden you really need him. You know what I mean? And then, oh, all of a sudden, well, here's who he wants in your cabinet. And so the point I'm making is just that who you are dependent on for money does have a big influence on what your cabinet looks like and what your agenda looks like. And I just wonder right away if kind of forcing him to be more reliant on the RNC, that in itself might have a huge, a huge hand in shaping whatever this presidential campaign and potentially, you know, second term in office is going to look like. So that was like kind of my takeaway of that.
No, that's I hadn't thought about that at all. That's fascinating because it's interesting. They definitely just put a victory on the board, and this is personal. I mean, these are his prized things, his buildings. That was
Trump loves his buildings.
Exactly. You're taking his precious buildings from him. I hadn't even thought about the fact that if you drained RNC money, it might actually force him to take a cabinet of people he doesn't want. And, you know, this is actually a win that forces him to play ball. That's an interesting take.
It's possible. I mean, I'm just kind of speculating about it, but it's like, look, like money in politics comes with strings attached to it. That's the way it works.
These lawsuits are putting up some wins. I mean, this one is, I was saying that they're going to be able to call, say, look, he was such a fraudster. This is the first time in New York City history, New York City's seized buildings because of his fraudulent business practices, and he's a known sexual assaulter or rapist, depending on how you want to view fake fingering incidents. But I don't want to get sued myself. I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. Gene Carroll, I believe you. Believe all women. That's what I say. But anyways, some real victories in these lawsuits. You got the Gene Carroll one. Donald Trump isn't allowed to deny it, and every time he does, he gets hit with another lawsuit, which keeps it in the news and costs him money. You've got the Stormy Daniels one coming back around. That's not exactly fun. Looks like the January 6th one in Atlanta has fallen apart, but they put some victories on the boards with the New York City ones.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's right. And as you kind of have mentioned many times, Rob, there's also which neither of us mentioned this time, but you've made this point many times, and this will relate to our next video. There's also the narrative war, where for every conviction they get, then that's he is or not conviction, whatever you want to call it. For every judgment they get, then it's OK. He's look at him. He's a criminal. Look at him. He's, he's a fraud. He's, as they'll say, he's sexually assaulted people, even though he wasn't convicted of that. But they, you know, it still aids in this narrative.
But the good news is once they seize the buildings, they might have a place to house all the migrants. So could work out.
We're going to need a lot of buildings for that, Rob. Maybe wouldn't that be, that'd be the ultimate like defeat of Donald Trump. If they end up just housing the migrants in all the Trump towers. Wow, I never even thought of that. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Fume. Cold turkey may be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break your bad habits. Not talking about some weird mind voodoo from your crazy neighbor. We're talking about our sponsor, Fume, pronounced Fume, spelled F-U-M. They look at the problem in a different way. Not everything in a bad habit is wrong. So instead of drastic, uncomfortable change, why not just remove the bad from your habit? Fume is an innovative, award-nominated device that does just that. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses all natural, delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy, and it makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is very helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. Stopping is something we all put off because it's hard, but switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. Fume has served over 100,000 customers and has thousands of success stories, and there's no reason that can't be you. Join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up the Journey Pack today. Just head to tryfume.com and use the promo code PROBLEM to save 10% off when you get the Journey Pack today. That's TryFume.com and use the promo code PROBLEM to save an additional 10% off your order today. All right, let's get back into the show. All right, anyway, here, if just in case you thought Sunday shows couldn't get dumb enough, here from earlier today is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
What do you say to an independent voter, an average voter who looks at what's going on with Donald Trump? You have his assets might be seized tomorrow. You also have the hush money case from the attorney general, the district attorney, Alvin Bragg of New York. You also have the Georgia case about election interference. You also have the special counsel investigation on election interference. You also have the classified documents case down in Florida. That's five cases. And to a voter, what do you say to a voter who says, well, that doesn't look like he's being treated equally before the law? That looks like somebody that the government is going after.
Has there ever been a president, Republican or Democrat, that has been subject to this level of criminal charges, indictments, and investigations?
This is not about... Because I just love already, Robert, is this just the most... It's the circular logic of all of it. So Jake Tapper asks AOC, well, what do you say to people who say, like, this just kind of looks like, you know, the Justice Department going after a guy? And she goes, has there ever been anyone who's had this many charges? And you're like, right. But that doesn't prove. It's like she's just bright enough to repeat the propaganda, but not bright enough to actually, like, grapple with the question. It's like, well, right, nobody's denying that no other president has been charged this many times. But the problem you have here is that there's not a single one of them that's a clear crime. So, like, I don't think anybody here would be upset if there was a former president who was getting charged more than anybody else. And they're like, well, what's he being charged with? And they're like, well, he stabbed a guy here. He stole from this guy. He killed two people here. He did all this. It's like, yeah, what are we going to do? Not charge him? Like, we have enough evidence to bring this to court. So we need to go, oh, all right, well, you got to go to trial and see what happened here. Except none of that's happened. There's not one example of where Donald Trump did something that's obviously a crime. It's like insane claims of defamation with ridiculous punishments, and the defamation was denying an allegation that he's never been convicted of. And then there's a whole bunch of novel legal theories where they've concocted, like, a theory about what a statute really means. Well, we've never enforced it this way before, but if we did, I think we could charge him for that. So that's the whole point. But again, it also shows here, because AOC is only smart enough to repeat the propaganda, it is a window into what you've been talking about for months now, Rob, which is like, okay, this is the propaganda line. This is the line. There's never been anyone who's been charged with so many things, and there's never been anyone. Hey, Grandma, when was the last time you remember your presidential candidate being in court for half of the campaign? You probably don't remember that, right? Well, that right there is proof. You see? And that's the whole game. You charge him with as many things as you can, and then you go, look, he's charged with so many things. Isn't that in itself proof that he's a crook?
It's amazing to see this prediction actually play out that I said. Yeah. It's all about creating your own evidence. I watched this thing with George Papadopoulos last week where he was asking, maybe it was Christy Noem, how is it that you can support this guy who's a known rapist, or maybe even use the language convicted rapist? And now you've got her going, there's 5 court cases against this guy. That's how terrible he is. I would also flip the script on these people and ask them, so if it's not that they're just going after him for being Donald Trump, what are we doing to review our systems that he got away for this for so long? And aren't we interested in what other criminals must exist? I mean, if we only discover this about Donald Trump because an AG ran that she was going to get him, and then she got him on business fraud, that was a terrible crime that the guy shouldn't even have his buildings for, how much other business fraud exists in New York City? And her claim was that that actually hurts other people because money went to him instead of other individuals. So I'm just saying, if you actually believe that to be true, that individuals were hurt because of the fraud of his buildings, don't we have to do a widespread review of buildings in New York City and the fraud?
Sure. Listen, Rob, you raise a good point, but I would just say the counter to that is that, look, sure, there were these holes in the system, right? Where this guy could be guilty of defaming this woman for a claim from 20 plus years ago. And sure, he's had these buildings for many decades and he defrauded the banks into getting them. And also back in January of 2021, there was something with the insurrection, and there's these other things. But the silver lining there, Rob, I'm sure on some level you're like, well, doesn't this represent a hole in our system that for all these years this went unchecked? But the good news is that the system corrected itself on all of these fronts in the year 2024.
Incredible.
So they just it happened to, on all of these different kids, they all happened to fall in 2024, and it just happened to, by a stroke of luck, work that way. Really unfortunate that it's an election year. Really unfortunate that happens to be the year he's running for president, that all of these just think about this in your minds. These cases are not related at all. There's no relation between a January 6th charge or a hush money charge or a defamation charge or a defrauding the bank charge. None of them are from the year 2024. None of them are from the year 2023 or even 2022. The most recent one is from the year 2021. But they all came together, whether decades old, in all of these different fields, all came together in the year that is 2024. Right,
And if we haven't weaponized these branches of government, can we do a review to see if other people are being prosecuted for similar trials? It's kind of like when the IRS was going after all those conservative agencies and they looked back and said, how can you say you're not weaponizing the IRS when statistically you're clearly auditing more Republican charities? Remember that was like an Obama thing.
Yes.
Kind of predates when I was more following politics, but I'm just saying,
no, I remember,
if you haven't weaponized these departments, how is Donald Trump the only person who's been subject to this kind of scrutiny that 5 cases have appeared against him?
Yeah, that is a fair question. Let's play the rest of AOC's response.
Party. This is not about politics. This is about corruption and criminality. We're talking about an individual who ordered essentially a terrorist attack on the capital of the United States.
All right, let's pause it right there. Why don't we charge him for that then? I got a quick question here, Rob.
Yeah, that one seems juicy.
He ordered a terrorist attack on the United States of America. I'll be honest, I think he should probably be arrested for that.
We got a special prison in Cuba for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he should be held without bail at least. Like, I mean, he ordering a terrorist attack on the United States of America. That's serious business. That's even worse than defamation. That's even worse than defrauding a bank. Ordered a terrorist attack on the United States of America. And here, by the way, is there's just so many aspects to the game here, right? But like, this is the type of person you have to be in politics. Someone like AOC, you have to be willing to say that, you know what I mean? Like, you have to be willing to say he ordered a terrorist attack on the United States of America. And you just know you're so full of shit. But here's the game too, is that just look at Jake Tapper's response to this. And Jake Tapper is supposed to play the objective journalist, right? But you know for a second, Jake Tapper would be interrupted. I mean, if any Trump supporter ever made a claim as outrageous as that, as just undeniably ridiculous and buffoonish as that, he'd be interrupting immediately and going, man, we can't. These are the networks who tell you they won't play Donald Trump's speeches because they don't want his lies broadcast. These are the people who are literally wanting to set up a ministry of truth to fight disinformation for years during COVID particularly, but for years before that too. Jake Tapper and all these other fucking hacks on CNN went on and on and on about misinformation and fake news. And this is what blah, blah, blah. This is why we need censorship. This is why people they need content moderation on social media. Yet look at his reaction. Take it back just a few seconds here. Just look at Jake Tapper's reaction and how he responds to AOC making the claim that Donald Trump ordered a terrorist attack on the United States of America.
Corruption and criminality. We're talking about an individual who ordered essentially a terrorist attack on the capital of the United States in order to retain power. That is not about being a Republican. It is not about being a Democrat. It's about being an unethical and individual who is subject and prone to criminality. And unfortunately, this is the state that we're in. And I actually think that the fact that it's happening in so many places and so many jurisdictions cuts in the face of that. This is not just New York. This is Georgia. This is federal courts as well.
Just sits there. Just lets her finish her rant. No pushback. Nothing. That's how it works. She could say something as outrageous as he ordered a terrorist attack on the United States of America. The only problem is that there was no terrorist attack and he didn't order it. But she could just make that claim.
If he really wanted to terrorize America, he could have used nukes, I guess.
Yeah, really, right?
I mean, if he was really trying to terrorize America, why would he say, let's go peacefully walk into a building and request more security on that day?
Right, right. And then tell him to go home.
Yeah.
You know, there is something here, though, is where you just realize the asymmetry in the like propaganda of it all, though, because the truth is that, you know, like the whole thing, the whole game, as we've said for a long time, is that, you know, politics is like professional wrestling. And there aren't two parties in America any more than there are really good guys and bad guys in professional wrestling. That's just kind of an act. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, in front of the cameras, it's all like, oh, brother, I'm going to destroy you. But when they go backstage, they're all just like buddies who are like, yeah, we did a good job out there. You know, OK, let's go spend this money. But just think about the fact, and look, in this analogy, the Democrats, of course, are the good guys and the Republicans are there to play the heel and, you know, be the villains. And that's why everyone's always trying to get them over. But think about the fact that, like, imagine if a Republican went on Fox News and said something as crazy as that, they'd interrupt him right away and be pushing back against him right away, because the even the Republican networks are always trying to not be called too crazy by the left wingers. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, oh, we can't let that air. They're all going to jump on us and call us all types of names. So we got to push back on that. Yet over there at CNN, they don't care at all what right wingers think about them. So you just say something like that and it goes unchallenged. I mean, like, I don't know, like, maybe I'm beating a dead horse here, but like, actually think about how insane the claim is that she just made. She basically said Donald Trump is Osama bin Laden, and it just goes unchallenged. Just yeah, no, you are right. And then, of course, her final point there is just that, oh, it's proof that that it is about his criminality is because the charges are coming from a bunch of different states as well as the federal government. And that's proof, because there could never be any collusion between state governments and the federal government. And yes, sure, the district attorneys that are charging him were funded by the Democrats' biggest donor, and who also funds color-coded revolutions all around the world. But like, whatever, it's not like there's any real connection there. And yes, they just all happen to happen they all happen to be brought to trial in 2024, which just happens to be, it's a crazy coincidence, man, that none of them, you know, got scheduled for 2023 and none of them got scheduled for 2025. They just all happen to be scheduled for 2024, the year when this guy's running for president. But I mean, look, they're happening in different states. So that's proof. It's not a legal system being weaponized against the guy. That short started with Joe Biden's Justice Department raiding his home in Mar-a-Lago, but that just happened to be under Joe Biden. I mean, come on. This is all just like too goddamn ridiculous. All right. Any other thoughts on your favorite congresswoman?
When New York seizes the building, what happens from there? Do they get to sell it? And then what does that money get used for? You know, the point I'm getting at is I always find it interesting. There's a lot of times these banks get big fines and then they get to admit no fault and they basically pay a bribe back to the government. And I guess that money just goes to the government. It doesn't go to the victims. And, you know, it's basically a bribe. This is somewhat interesting to me because if we just created a mechanism by which voters can vote in AGs to essentially seize assets from billionaires by prosecuting fraud claims and then returning money to the local communities.
Well, I think, I think the money would have to be sent to the banks here, which I think.
Oh, that's probably funny.
Yeah. Which is really, it's another way, you know, so the good guys end up getting their money here.
The banks that made money on the loans now get to get the asset also. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Well, is she seizing? She's seizing for the defamation suit. No, or is that for the bank suit? You're right.
This is the bank for the fraud one. Suit.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, I can't. Sorry, it's hard for me to even keep up with this. Yeah, it's the whole thing is goddamn nuts. But I guess the real lesson there is the banks always win in the end. They're like, hey, we were happy with the deal to begin with, but sure, I mean, you want to give us some more money, that'd be fine too. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Backscape, the fastest growing male grooming company on the planet. Just got even better with the backs because Backscape just launched their 2.0 friction fit handle, making the best back shaver on the market even better. It's engineered for back shaving. The new 2.0 friction fit handle gives you the ease of use to get the Backscape razor in and out of the handle effortlessly. Pop it in to experience the entirely independent back shave with the ergonomic handle that gets every hard to reach spot on your back in 5 minutes or less. Pop it out to touch up the rest of your body. The decision is completely yours. They have a new titanium shave head for a smoother, more comfortable shave that respects your skin and delivers a clean finish your lady will absolutely love, or your gentleman will love. By the way, we don't judge here at Part of the Problem. Look, if you're uncomfortable with back hair and you haven't been doing anything about it, now you can. This is a great product for people who want to shave their back. Go check it out. It's time to take back the power of grooming your back by going to backscape.com and use the promo code PROBLEM10 for 10% off your first order on any of the kits on their website. Not completely sold yet. Backscape is so confident that the new friction fit handle and titanium shave heads will slide smoother than your best pickup line or your money back, guaranteed. One more time, go to backscape.com and use the promo code PROBLEM10 for 10% off your first order. All right, let's get back into the show. All right, let's switch gears here. There was a moment on Politically Incorrect, on Real Time with Bill Maher. Politically Incorrect is the old show. On Real Time with Bill Maher that I thought was pretty great. Kara Swisher, is that her name? Kara Swisher?
Where did this lady come from?
She's been around for a while. I think she wrote for the New Yorker maybe for a little bit, but she's kind of like been a corporate media creature since like the 90s or maybe a little after that, but she's been around for a long time.
She's been popping up on social media a lot recently.
She's been around a lot recently. I think like she's
Diet Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, kind of, but she was Rachel Maddow before Rachel Maddow. But I believe her specialty is like covering like the internet, basically, has always kind of been her thing, like going back quite a while. She's, you know, I don't know what to say. She's a hack. She is basically has the position that every person in the corporate media has. You know, I don't know what else to say. You could, you know, if I gave you the topic, or if you gave me the topic, I could tell you her views on everything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, where there's just people like that, where it's like, you're just basically possessed by this ideology, and that's, you're not even really a person anymore. You're just, I could tell you in the same way that you could say what every single person, you know, if I just said, like, you don't watch MSNBC religiously or anything like that, but if I just said the person who hosts the 4 p.m. hour on MSNBC, where do they stand on climate change? And you'd be like, oh, well, it's an existential threat that must be met with immediate action. And be like, well, oh, it's really impressive. You got that right. Where do they stand on abortion? Well, it's a woman's body and she has a right to choose. Whereas, oh, yeah, you totally got that right. Where do they stand on taxes? Well, the rich have to pay their fair share. And, you know, people who, blah, you know, it's like you get every single political point and you already know. That's kind of who she is. Anyway, this was one of those moments where Bill Maher was a little mavericky, which I do appreciate when he is that. So anyway, I want to play this clip because this was going super viral and I did find it very interesting.
I want to ask you about this case that's before the Supreme Court, Murphy versus Missouri. It used to be Biden versus Missouri. It's a free speech issue. Mm-hmm. Very interesting to me because I was always on the page during the pandemic that they should not be shutting down debate about medical matters.
Yes, correct.
I was a dissenter on many of these issues.
Let's just pause it for a second. Listen, I'll just say this because he's going over the idea of it's a broader conversation about free speech, and he brings up the pandemic and he goes, and I was always under the belief that, like, we shouldn't be shutting down debate during the pandemic. And she goes, correct. And, you know, and I just want to say that, look, obviously me and you podcasted together through all of COVID. And we, you know, let's just say we were critics of the policies that were enacted during that time, pretty much all of them. And I'm still to this day furious about all of the stuff that happened during COVID. And I try to kind of remind myself that, like, I had a great time in those years. They were some of the best years of my life. And, you know, I did very well both personally and professionally and all of that stuff. But, like, it's still so infuriating what they did to this whole goddamn country, all for nothing, you know, except their own personal benefit. And if you haven't yet, go listen to the episode with Tom Woods that we just did a few episodes ago, because it's just incredible. And you really got to get Tom's book, Diary of a Psychosis. It's amazing. Look, what should have happened in, like, a just world is that every one of the lockdown governors and Fauci all should have been put on trial. They all committed crimes. And they should all be put on trial. And then probably, like, the head of the CDC, almost everybody at the NIH and the CDC should be subpoenaed and thoroughly investigated to find out exactly what role they played in it too. Cause there's probably a lot more people that got to go to jail too. Probably a lot of people in the big pharmaceutical companies as well, should be arrested. And, you know what I mean? Like, people like should go to jail over this. And then to the people who, like, you probably can't quite cross that line with, you know, like, people in the media or something like that, or you're like, all right, you didn't technically commit a crime, but you just spread all this propaganda the whole time. I'm a libertarian. I'm not trying to come up with, like, be a thought police or, like, laws like that. I would settle for, like, a reasonable compromise of them just being fired and forced to wear a paper bag on their head whenever they went out in public, maybe pick up trash along the side of a highway, and you would just drive by and you'd see someone with, like, a paper bag over their head picking up trash. And then, because you see the paper bag, you'd know, oh, that was one of the people who was spreading the COVID bullshit. And you'd throw trash at them as you drive by. Like, something reasonable like that. Okay? That's probably what should have happened in a just world. We haven't gotten any of that yet. We haven't even gotten all of the remnants of the COVID, you know, hysteria gone. People have not been, you know, made whole who were ruined from the thing. You know what I mean? Big businesses haven't been forced to give back the handouts that they got or anything like that. All we have is that these fuckers got to squirm when this gets brought up. And so I just want to be clear and be like, that's not nearly enough, but I do take some pleasure in it. And it's kind of like a sadistic thing. Like, I take pleasure in these people just looking so awful and squirming, but I'm just being honest. I do take pleasure in it. It's amazing how now they have to admit it. You could see how uncomfortable she is already when he's like, well, I don't know. I don't think during the pandemic, people should have been censored for having the debate. And she's like, yeah, of course not. Of course not. I'm sure you were saying that during the thing. Were you? Kara Swisser, whatever goddamn name is. Were you saying that while it was going on? No, I bet you weren't. All right. Anyway, let's keep lying.
Correct. I was a dissenter on many of these issues. And as the years roll by now, we see that the dissenting opinions on a lot of these things were quite the right ones. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Although we still don't know. We're not going to know perfectly, but go ahead.
Okay. All right. Just pause it.
We should have been able to
just pause it already. I just love how now all of these, isn't it great, Rob, that now it's like, well, I mean, we're never going to know perfectly. Oh, that's the standard now. Oh, now the standard is if we don't know perfectly, I mean, we really shouldn't jump to conclusions one way or the other. Remember how certain they were and how if you ever just wanted to go, hey, you know, we don't know perfectly. They'd be like, you want to kill grandma. But now when it comes up with hindsight, it goes, oh, you know, a lot of the dissenters were proven right. And she goes, well, I mean, I wouldn't say we know perfectly one way or the other. You know, I mean, we're not gods. We can't know everything, but you knew enough. You knew enough to support every one of these totalitarian policies. Isn't that right? And now in hindsight, they just have to sit there and go, well, you know, nobody knows for sure. It was a crazy time.
Well, She's nice enough to say that he can go ahead on his own show. So at least She's polite about it.
Yeah, right. All right, let's keep playing.
To argue about whether it came from a lab, mm-hmm. which we weren't, sure. Things like that, natural immunity, whether it was better to go to the beach mm-hmm. and get sun and fresh air, as I would have said,
okay,
as opposed to sitting home and day drinking,
right,
and putting on weight. They never mentioned that obesity was the biggest factor.
I get it.
They have a lot to answer for. Anyway.
They do, but you're in the middle of a plague and a debate that people don't know. And so
yes,
you're gonna have
so you should be able to debate it.
Pause it right there already. And just watch the trick here, because this is what's so infuriating about these guys. So it's like, so first Bill Maher goes, you know, a lot of the dissenters were right. And she's like, well, we don't know for sure. And then he just starts listing out a few of the things. And she goes, I mean, they closed down beaches. Anybody defending that? Is there any scientist who's going to make an argument for me that beaches were a hotbed of transmission outside? Outside where everybody's social distances anyway? Like, you're not like, I don't know how close, even on the most crowded day at a beach, I think you could almost always be 6 feet away from like the group that's next to you, which by the way, also was just a made up number, as Fauci admitted, right?
Just kind of sort of appeared.
It just appeared. I walked into my office and the number 6 was laying right in front of me. Where did it come from? Where did it go?
So then he starts like laying down some of these policies. And what's her response? She's like, okay, but look, we were in the middle of a plague. You know, just give these. Okay, so the people who got it wrong and enforced their wrong views with violence, right? Like made it the edict forced. It's not like they got it wrong and just recommended this. Like people were arrested for going to beaches. Okay. So like the people who got it wrong and forced it on the American people, hey, it was a plague. They were doing the best they could. That's the energy we have toward the tyrants. You know, you get some right, you get some wrong. All right, let's keep playing.
The moment was not. People make mistakes and science says it makes mistakes.
Well, this is what the lawsuit is about.
Okay.
Because there were two doctors, Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Kulldorff. They're from Stanford and Harvard.
Right.
And they said, we were shut down. Not always fully, but, you know, there are ways to do that. And they're not radicals. Mm-hmm. They were saying that, like, we're going too far with school closures. Again, I think has been proved right. Mm-hmm. My question was always, why are your doctors more important than my doctors, the ones I want to listen to? And the social media companies were in the tank with the government, as opposed to what you were just saying before about, you know, you're the watchdog, and you have been.
Right.
They just did the bidding of the government. That's what the lawsuit's about.
It is about that, but it's whether they can talk to each other reasonably and whether they can be coerced. And I think the Supreme Court's going to go against it, because social media companies also have First Amendment rights, by the way. And so I think the issue is, what is the government talking to these companies about? Is it coercing them, or is it just having reasonable discussions? If the government knows, say, about a major threat and it doesn't talk to these companies, we get into all kinds of trouble. So I think what's happened is reductiveness. Like, everyone's got to be, you were wrong, I was right, and stuff like that. And what's happened in this culture, and I think it's because of three things: social media, gerrymandering, and Rupert Murdoch.
Okay. So anyway, by the way, I just want to make the point that at the end, then she'll go, oh, but then of course you have all these people on social media like, you were wrong, I was right, and this is all because of gerrymandering and Rupert Murdoch, and blames these people. So when, again, just the point I wanted to make, and then I know you want to jump in on some of that other stuff, Rob, because it's great too. But the point is that, and this is what they always do. We pointed this out when Cuomo was on Bill Maher with the other guy who was saying he supported closing down the schools, but he was doing the best he can. And all these people on Twitter are saying, you were wrong and I was right. When it comes to the tyrants who imposed policies that you yourself have to admit they got completely wrong, when you smug pieces of shit were talking down to people like us who in real time, I'm sorry, Rob, it wasn't that long ago. I remember it very well. In real time, I was sitting right here and you were sitting right there, and me and you were right about it and they were wrong about it with certainty. And even now you'll admit you were completely wrong. But when you talk about those people, you go, it was a pandemic, it was the plague, they were doing the best they could, which was not the energy at the time. But then when they're talking about us, they point the finger. All these people on social media saying, you were wrong and I was right. I'm sorry, bitch, you were wrong and I was right. And that's the least of it. Be thankful you're not picking up trash on the side of a highway with a paper bag over your face, okay? This is the least of what you get. Yes, I'm not going to stop pointing out that me and Rob were right and you guys were wrong. Sorry. And you can sit there and make excuses for the people who were wrong and enforced their wrongness on the population. Fine. Feel however you feel about it. All the episodes are recorded. The internet's forever. What a beautiful thing. There's a million different clips of us through this whole thing, tearing apart this stuff in real time. And you guys, by the way, I don't recall anyone. I don't recall any of the lockdown governors or anyone at the CDC or Fauci or Biden or Trump, for that matter, or any of them ever saying, hey, look, it's a plague. We don't exactly know, but we're doing the best we can. They all acted like it was certainty. They knew they were right. And not only did they know you were wrong, they knew you were a bad person. Except they were wrong about all of it. All right, so you can jump on all that stuff with the government and social media companies. Because
I'd like to start with, it's really helpful to know who was wrong before so that you can know who might be worth taking advice from in the future. And so if you're a news organization and you keep giving me wrong information, that's good for me to know, because then maybe I can go listen to someone with right information. Like, if you've lost all of your clients' money on your stock picks, that would be good to know. If you've given all of your doctor and all of your patients are dying because you gave them bad medical advice, that'd be good to know. And it would be a really stupid thing to go, oh, who cares who was right or wrong in the past? Why would you focus on that? I mean, if there was one thing that's just important for us as a civilization, is to figure out who's good at getting things right and then listening to those
and
people.
Who else other than government officials gets that luxury? Like, if you like try that at your next job interview, and they'd be like, oh, did you bring a resume? And you'd be like, oh, who cares about the past?
Yeah.
Who cares about what anyone did in the past? Like, yeah, okay, I got fired from my last four jobs for stealing money. But like, what? Is that relevant to the future?
Are we just going to be focused on who got things wrong in the past?
Yeah, right.
Is that really a beneficial process for us understanding who should we be listening to now? Who might have gotten it wrong before? And then on the social media, just the idea, anytime they're inserting the word reasonable, it's always that fairy magical dust of leftism logic that there's this perfect amount of government intervention in the market. Oh, if we just have the right amount, you know, the same way there was the moderate Syrian rebels. Anytime they're using that little word, it's just because they want to be able to insert themselves. And we all know what they do the second they have the authority to do to exert power and control.
No, that's 100% right. And then, of course, the distinction that she draws there, which is going to be their legal defense, and we'll see how that goes. But where she goes, well, the question is, were they coerced by the government or was the government just talking to them? And we've covered this before. But of course, the idea is it's like, you know, this is like it's like when they I heard someone was saying, who was saying this the other day, but when they were talking about the ICJ South African case against Israel, and they're talking about whether it's genocide or not or something like that, and it's like, well, yeah, like what's the standard here? The standard isn't that Israel at some point went, we are going to commit a genocide against these people. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody ever says, like, there's never been a genocidal regime that says we're going to commit genocide now. It's just that you kind of judge what they did say and then the actions that they took. But like, yeah, no, I'm sure you're never going to like, what do you even mean then by coercion? I'm sure you're not going to find in writing a time when anyone from the government said to any of the big tech companies, we are coercing you into kicking this person off. And if you don't do that, we are going to kill you or something. But come on, when the government gets involved and goes, when the Biden administration goes, why is Alex Berenson still on Twitter? To the higher ups at Twitter. Come on, you know what that is. That's the biggest gang in the land going, hey, we'd like this to be taken care of. And by the way, we're the most powerful people around. So maybe you want to take care of it for us. And if that doesn't cross the line, you know, it's like it's literally on the level of someone like pulling out a gun and like pointing it to the ground and going, I'd like your wallet. And then you give it to them and they go, I never coerced them. So I just literally told them I'd like it. Well, I didn't say I'm going to shoot you if you don't give it to me. But like any reasonable person goes, yeah, you robbed that guy.
And the process here was government got to say, hey, we're doing the following thing to save people's lives. And then if you questioned, hey, will that actually save people's lives? They went, this is going to bring dissent and get in the way of our ability to save people's lives. This is dangerous. And so they get to apply pressure to a social media company going, you have dangerous information on your platform. But that's really just a trick for compliance that could be used for anything. So, for example, if the government decided that you and I were criminals and we were arrested and the social media people started posting, why were Dave and Rob arrested? These aren't criminals. Well, that's now dangerous questions because it might have other people saying things like, right. I'm just saying you, it's a circular way of creating that anything is dangerous. And it's really just a way for forced compliance, which is essentially threatening social media companies.
Yep. No, that's right.
I don't know if I said that in the clearest way.
No. I think it made total sense to me. I'm with you. All right. Listen, we're gonna wrap there, guys. Come see us in Portland, St. Louis, Atlantic City, Las Vegas, all over the place. ComicDaveSmith.com, RobbieTheFire.com. Go check out Run Your Mouth, Rob's other awesome podcast, and we will catch you next time. Peace.